Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Odyssey put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Odyssey. Visit ads.odyssey.com.
This hour is brought to you by Vasectomy Clinics of Chicago.
The Bernstein and Holmes Show.
We need to get everybody together again and do the old Mo Howard smack their heads together. The phone knows where you are. Your phone knows what you're doing.
It's geolocation.
So it learns information about me.
Seems like an invasion of privacy.
Dude, if you think that's bad, go to Google Earth and type in your address.
When you're doing it, when you're creating a fake name to do it and wearing a Shock G Humpty Hump nose when you're trying to go into these virtual casinos.
All right, stop what you're doing, because I'm about to ruin the image and the style that you're used to. I look funny, but yo, I'm making money, see? So yo, world, I hope you're ready for me. Now gather round. I'm the new fool in town, and my sound's laid down by the underground. I drink a bottle of Hennessy, you got on your show.
Hey, is your name Isaiah Rogers?
No. My name is Humpty, pronounced with the Humpty.
Hello, my name is Mr. Snrub, and I come from someplace far away. Yes, that will do.
Bernstein and Holmes, middays 10 a.m. till 2 on 670 The Score.
Happy Hump Day, indeed, pronounced with the Ump Day, as we broadcast live from the Hyundai Studios, brought to you by your local Hyundai dealers. We're going to talk football with Mike Florio at 11, baseball with Steve Stone at noon, basketball with Trista Crick at 1, and then baseball again with Russ Dorsey at 1:23. We got High Noon in there as well at 11:40, and all kinds of other things as well. 312-644-6767. That is the phone number. That is Ray Diaz. That is Adam Stasinski. That is Brandon Fryer. We got Connor O'Donnell, Kevin Lapka doing the things that they do. They got all sorts of new machinery.
Yeah, they're like acing us out of our little space.
Wow. There's all sorts of
their space now.
Stuff going on back there. And
Cody Westerlund was here.
Whoa. Must be a big day. And you know what I love is that for Lawrence's birthday, I get presents.
Yeah.
That was so great. Thank you so much.
Well, you were so down about the golf that I figured I'd
buy me off?
No, I didn't buy it. So.
Well, I mean, thanks to TaylorMade.
Yes, big thanks to TaylorMade, who sent me some stuff a little while ago. And I was like, you know, my partner is actually a little bit more into the golf thing than I am.
Well, not really. I mean, you like to go hit balls and
I
stuff.
Do, yeah. but I know that I've made a conscious choice. I haven't played a round yet, and I've made a conscious choice that most of my athletic endeavors that have to do with my back will be reserved for softball until softball is over.
Ah.
So, like, look, this guy needs a win.
And you also needed a rangefinder and those tailor-made. It's
and a boombox.
Yeah, there's like a little digital Bluetooth speaker thingy in there. I could be one of those people that rides around on their bike with their music blaring.
Well, right? You do that so that you're not wearing...
I know why, but it's still... I mean, you don't really need to play your music for everyone as you ride around on your bike. But
no.
I know people do that. But, you know, go to the driving range and put on, like you say, put on my Yacht Rock.
Put your Yacht Rock on. You get that forgiveness driver out there and go to work. I see you're already trolling your son.
He's got to wake up first.
Well, yeah, because he's a... child, and he's finished with high school now.
And troll him until he wakes up.
He will remember this is one of the best times of his life when he had nothing to do and no responsibility.
More carbon, more forgiveness.
So, yes, thanks. Big thanks to TaylorMade.
Yeah.
So,
sweet.
Now Dan's got a new club and a new rangefinder and a boombox. And
I went and I got my lob wedge yesterday. Got a new putter yesterday.
You're all set.
And I'm still going to be bad.
That's okay.
Yes.
But as long as you enjoy yourself, that's key.
Right.
So in transition yesterday, a lot of the discussion was the price point of these items you were going to buy. Dan, did you end up going to your usual shop then? And
I showed Parkins before I bought it. I texted a picture to Parkins while he was on the air because I got a PXG lob wedge. That the original, it's an old one. The original retail was like $350. I'm seeing prices for this model at anywhere from $100 to $175, $180. I got it for $59.99, and I got an Odyssey putter for $29.99.
And now you got a TaylorMade driver.
For nothing.
For free $99.
Right, at a $250 rangefinder for free $99, too.
You damn yeah. right.
Yeah. Everything came up Bernstein.
Hey,
right?
Every once in a while, I'm allowed.
See, yesterday he was in here all saying, oh, your golf doesn't mean anything anymore.
Buy me off, man. There it is. Blood money.
And now, you know, I'm like, hey, let me dip into the PIF.
There it is, the Sovereign Lawrence Fund, the House of the House of Sod, and the House of L. And then you get the Sovereign Investment Fund from the House of L. They actually also wear keffiyeh too when they do that. They're all walking around in flowing robes.
I mean, honestly, Tony Gill and Russ Dorsey at Tony's wedding were in flowing robes.
Yeah, see, I'm telling you. Yeah, everything comes around. But yeah, I'll take a little bit of that blood money.
Yes.
Get out there on the course and whack it around a little bit, if you know what I mean.
That's a good thing.
Yup.
I think. Are you excited for game three?
Yeah.
It's one of the things I don't, and I get it, like the travel, and you're trying not to get in the way of the Stanley Cup final and all of that stuff. I would have liked game three to have been last night, but okay, it's tonight. And so I'm like, all right, man, like what? Is Mike Malone, he saw the adjustment that Miami made. How does he counter that adjustment? What are the offensive changes that we're going to see in the Nuggets tonight that will take advantage of what Miami wants to bait them into?
Well, it was really interesting, and I think we did a nice job sort of explaining what happened in the last game where there was an incredible stat that I read that on Jokic post-ups, he averaged 2.2 points per individual possession, per paint touch, which means Miami would be better served allowing an uncontested dunk rather than trying to foul him or letting him possibly pass out to it for a three.
And that's kind of what they did.
They also have been much more physical, jamming all of the off-ball movements. That is an old-school coaching thing. So I do think officiating is going to matter a lot tonight and what they start calling early, because they were much more physical in away from the ball, getting in the way of where they want to go on their patterns. Because essentially, think of Jokic as a quarterback. And once he gets the ball, the play starts. And think about patterns. And just like the same principle in football is if you can get a jam at the line of scrimmage, a legal jam, they let you get away with being physical and you knock guys off their routes, you change the rhythm of a football play. That's the same principle that was at work on the basketball court.
It's funny that you mentioned Jokic as a quarterback because there was a Justin Fields-esque-ness to his performance where it was like, you know, Justin, if you wanted to run, you could run. You know, Jokic, if you want to just take these twos, you could take these twos. And then that person, they're fighting their own nature and their own wiring. Is like, wait, you're going to give me 30 yards? Okay, I'll take the 30 yards. You're going to give me Gabe Vincent guarding me at the top of the key? My brain says that I'm supposed to go to the basket mm-hmm. on this. And Miami's like, that's exactly what we want you to do.
Keep making the right basketball play.
Right. Because
we're going to make all your other reads more difficult.
And then the lack of rhythm, like you're saying, where basically, to keep with the basketball football analogy, receivers were being rerouted.
Yes.
They were being rerouted. And so those guys never got in. I won't say never. They didn't get into the game until late. And Jamal Murray, it was almost like in the fourth quarter, Murray realized, like, oh, we're running out of time, and I need to do something.
They were still up 15 late. I mean, that's what's crazy, is we're talking about it because of the outcome. But they were still playing fine and pulling away. But what a great stat to look at for Jokic is potential assists. I talked about that after game one, that where he had 6 assists in the first quarter and could have had 11. It's how many times he sets up a shot that reasonably could be made. And his potential assists were down, especially later in the game. So that, I mean, that really measures these completed passes that he's making. And if you think of it through that model of disruption at the line of scrimmage and changing what a quarterback sees, hurrying his progressions, seeing ghosts, all that stuff we talk about, that's what was going on. And I don't know if they can do it again.
I'm looking forward to it. To me, it's hard for me to see Miami winning this thing, but I appreciated the tactical change that Eric Spoelstra made, his team being able, for the most part, to execute it, and then their effort. Like, you could see that guys were, that it was important early on that they had told Max Strus, hey, man, we still believe in you. Take these shots. Like, don't pass up these open shots. And then he got going early on in the first quarter of that game. He didn't do much offensively for the rest of the game, but he was in a good place to start. Same thing with Duncan Robinson, where they said, go crazy, man. Like, we need...
go crazy!
We need points from somewhere. Someone's going to get it. And the striking part, I thought, with Robinson... wasn't him making shots from the perimeter. That's kind of what he does. But his ability to look at where there might be opportunities for him to cut to the basket and him taking advantage of that.
And they had to make 17 threes to win. I think that the adjustment that Denver's going to make is to keep doing what they're doing and keep fighting through and say, all right, you're not making 17 of 35 again.
Well, I will say, though, Miami did such a good job with ball movement that if you look at some of the shots they had,
good shots, yeah.
They were good threes, and the closeouts were super late. So you like the amount of space that Miami shooters had at the 3-point line, it was almost like they were shooting uncontested threes because of ball rotation.
Yeah, less contested, sure. That's the name of the game.
And so if you're able to work your offense that way again, where Denver isn't fighting as hard through screens and through pin downs to get to the shooter, if you're going to give yourself the best opportunity to make those shots, that makes you a little bit more dangerous to me.
People ask you, where's Layla? It's Wednesday. Well, she had a prior commitment. Layla today is speaking to students
at Notre Dame,
at University of Notre Dame. And because of that, we had a Layla Monday instead of a Layla Wednesday. If you missed it, I'm sorry. If you enjoyed it, I'm glad. But that's why. We just had to have a different Layla Rahimi day this week.
Yeah, she has a lot going on this week. So we wanted to make sure that you know, people got their Layla fix. But also, we didn't want her like coming in here and doing like an hour of the show and then getting in a car and going to South Bend. Like, no, wake up, you know. And go out there and teach the children of the future, because I believe the children are the future.
I believe that they're good and terrible. We need to talk some White Sox because they've won 4 in a row. We have to recalibrate our Sox math right now.
Oh, yeah, that's right. We got to do Sox math.
We have to do that. I was a little surprised that they decided to play last night because there were a lot of games in the area, New York and Washington, that due to air quality were canceled. And there's warnings all across there today.
Because the wildfires are like right there. Like the wind pattern is taking the wildfire.
It's really bad.
Yeah.
Really bad. And I don't know if it came through in the broadcast at all, just how severe and how bad the air quality is. Maybe that's what...
I thought when they showed like the view going out from home plate, you could see the sky just didn't look right.
I mean, it's not right even here.
Yeah, I mean, it's we've had days that are, from a weather standpoint, supposed to be mostly sunny, and it's just been hazy because of the wildfires. So
And you get that weird afternoon sun where it looks like Tatooine.
Yes.
Except there's only one sun. That's the difference. But it would, if there were two.
Yes.
Where it looks like he's staring up there. And maybe that's because his house was on fire also.
Well, and you're trying to get the hell out of Tatooine.
Yeah. And
it's awful.
Aunt Beru and Uncle Owen had better days.
I will say, though, that was one of my favorite things that they did in Kenobi. Like, Aunt Beru, a real one.
Really?
Mm-hmm. They did a whole thing where you got to see their love for him. Like, they put it on display.
Yeah, they added a lot of depth to, okay, mm-hmm, to the characters.
Because Uncle Owen was just kind of gruff.
Yeah, yeah, well, we find out why Uncle Owen is gruff in Kenobi. And he's had quite enough of Obi-Wan Kenobi and his nonsense.
And his fairy tales and all that.
And
keep it away. My kid isn't going to be involved in that.
And as someone who doesn't have children but considers himself the goat of uncles, I felt all of that. Because Aunt Beru was like, you want to come get my nephew? Bet. Come get him and see what happens. It was a very, like, they did a great job of giving you the backstory of Uncle Owen and Aunt Beru. They were not to be trifled with.
Well, until they got too toasty.
Well,
things got a little too hot.
Yeah, but that was when they were older. When they were younger, they were out here with them things.
White Sox talk and Sox-math. I have Sox-math.
Wait, you guys, how are you going to do Sox-math? Layla's not there. Can you guys at least send it over to Jason Benetti or Gordon Beckham?
Can you put up a picture of Layla's feet? For Sox Math.
Can you put up a picture of Gordon Beckham's feet and his hair?
And Jason Benetti's feet, please.
That's next.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Odyssey put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Odyssey. Visit ads.odyssey.com.
You're listening to Bernstein and Holmes. Middays 10 to 2 on 670 The Score.
1-2 on the ground. Shortstop Tim Anderson. Sox win at Yankee Stadium. Liam Hendricks, his first save coming back. Win number 27 for the Sox, 27-35. Yankees go to 36-26, and the Sox are 4.5 back in the American League Central. Wow.
They are 4.5 back. They're still 8 under 500 at 27-35, but they're winning. It's better than being 12 under.
Yeah,
so get to 500. Once they get to 500, we can start talking about things with a little bit more seriousness.
That's your stance on this?
Yeah, get to 500, and that earns you a lot more respect than being 8 under.
Even with the 8 under being 4.5 back?
Yes. Yeah, I think that's not unreasonable.
No, I don't think it's unreasonable at all. It's what we were discussing last week, where the idea of your proximity to the top of the division doesn't matter as much as whether or not your team is good.
Right.
And over the last, I mean, look, you're as whole as you're going to get if you're the White Sox right now.
We had the Sebi game because there's been a Sebi game before. There was a 3-home run game at one point. That second one was placatad.
Yes. The first one was a Yankee Stadium home run.
Yep.
And the second one, he got every single bit of it.
The second one was an any stadium home run.
Yep.
Is what that was. So the White Sox are 27-35.
Wait, is it time?
Yeah!
It's your humble
Now, we have been using 85 as our standard for socks math. Let me first ask, are we still keeping our benchmark at 85?
Yes, we're going to keep it at 80 because you were thinking about lowering it to 83?
Yeah.
No, we're going to keep it at 85 for now. For now. We might have to adjust it because this is a bad division, but let's still go with 85 wins the division.
Okay, because if we do the projected standings, the Fangraphs has the Twins at 83 wins. The White Sox at 70, White Sox at 75 wins, the Guardians at 78 wins, Tigers at 72. So they've got 83 as the number.
So the White Sox would need to win 84, so we might as well just keep the number at 85.
Because that's what we've been using. Love the craft work. 27-35 is where they stand. That means 62 games have been played. That leaves a clean 100 remaining on the slate.
Ooh, that makes the math a little bit easier.
I love this. This will be the easiest day I have maybe at Sox Math. So I have to enjoy this while I can. I'll probably get it wrong anyway. So I have them needing to go 58-42 from here on in.
So only 16. I mean, at one point they had to be 22 games over. And so that's 16 games right?
They're making progress. They are making progress.
14 games over. What'd you say? 52-48.
58-42.
58-42. Yes. 16.
So they are making progress. Things are getting a little bit better. Although part of me last night was thinking, if you feel like trading Lucas Giolito, if he puts it back together,
best pitcher in baseball.
Well, I mean,
one of them.
He's not re-signing, right?
Well, okay. Let's talk about this.
Lucas Giolito, worst pitcher in baseball.
Stephen B. Smith. At the time that story ran, the fortunes of the White Sox were a lot more dire than what they are right now. If you were to trade Lucas, it's pretty much the equivalent of the white flag.
Well, I mean, you'd be trading everybody.
Right?
I'm presuming that it's either you're adding and you're trying to bolster whatever this is, or you're trading everybody, and we know they haven't made a commitment yet, but...
The way that I'm looking at it is like this. They don't want to give up on what it is that they've built. Even though the indications are that it's not good enough to win a World Series, okay?
Although we know that if you get in the tournament, you can win it. It's baseball. It's high variance.
Right. That's part of the flaw in the process of how the White Sox go about this. Like, that's the sticking point for them. Where if Rick's being honest... And maybe his honesty is, I still haven't seen my team fully whole. Give me the month of June to figure out what my team looks like fully whole, and then I can make a better assessment on what to do with the parts. At the time that that report came out, and that was a Nightingale too, right? I think that was Nightingale who put that out there. At the time that came out, the White Sox were cooked. Like, they were one of the worst teams in baseball. By the way, statistically, they still are one of the worst teams in baseball. But now things look a little bit better. So if someone in the front office of the White Sox leaked that information out or offered that information up, at the time, the circumstances were different. Mm-hmm. And if you're Rick and you were the person that leaked it, you can just say, well, it's different now. Like, yes, he is high value, but he's also high value to us.
And maybe you're leaking it as a trial balloon. There's all sorts of reasons why they put something in the plumbing, see where it comes out, that kind of deal. But it doesn't matter why they did. The question is, do you think he would re-sign? I still don't think so. I think there's been so much bad blood, and the issue with that, the small difference in their arbitration numbers.
$75,000.
The quibbling over a trifling amount in their arbitration negotiation.
it seems as if Lucas likes it here. He does have Ethan Katz, who has helped him tremendously since he was a teenager, as the pitching coach here. But do you feel like you're in a position where everyone here is built to win? And if you were going to come back, you would want, assurances is a strong word, but you'd want an indication on how the front office views what this team is going to look like in the near future if you're him. And maybe they've got the indication. Lucas doesn't strike me as the type of person that'd be like, I'm not coming back here. I think that he's a lot more thoughtful than that. And he's kind of been in, oh, all right, wait and see mode on all of this stuff. But I do think the proximity to the top of the division for the White Sox plays a role in what it is that they do next. Because sure, if you're looking at it as soberly as you can, you will look at the White Sox and go, they still have a long way to go to get to a point where you feel like they're contending. Do they have a lot of talent? Yes. But their talent seems to, like, look at what Luis Robert was doing. And now look at what Luis Robert is doing. And it's the inconsistency of performance. And you still got that from some of your best players. You saw it last night. You saw Robert, again, having a communication issue in the outfield.
In the air, left center field. Robert is not going to make the catch. Wow, it looked like he had a play. Instead, the Yankees are going to score. Kiner Falefa drops it in. Luis Robert Jr. pulled up, Gordon.
Yeah, he did. Looks like there was a lot of miscommunication. Benintendi was tracking, and then Robert got there, and just miscommunication. He's right there. Instead of going to grab it and take charge, he thinks Benintendi's there.
Oh, man, the first hit of the game is that.
Yeah, it's a bummer. No way around it. That's a bummer.
Yeah, it's bad baseball is what it is. That can't happen. That cannot happen in a big league game, whether it's the first hit or whether it's the eighth hit. That can't happen. And it's thrown into more focus when it's the first hit. But make the play. Your veteran major league outfielders.
Yes. Someone needs to make a play. So like, the sober thing, like trying to look at it soberly. You have your biggest free agent signing that you've ever had. He doesn't have a home run. It's June 7th. Your shortstop, who you were counting on, no home runs for TA either, right?
Correct.
And over a year, right? Over a calendar year?
No, we got to get to next month.
Okay.
It'll be a calendar year.
That's significant. Those are two positions where you would expect there to be power coming from.
You'd expect 15 from Benintendi and 20 from Anderson.
Yeah. And maybe both those guys get hot, although the trend on Benintendi says no. He's a guy that still gets on base. He still can drive balls, but he's not getting any lift. So when you really look at it, you go, Grandal has kind of come back to normal. And I mean, normal for him in a White Sox uniform, which has been at times okay, but mostly not okay. Which begs the question, if you're a team that has designs on winning the American League Central, and you know that you are struggling from a run production standpoint and a power standpoint, how can you write a lineup without Jake Berger in it?
There's a whole segment for that.
I know.
We're setting aside a whole segment for that, but you can't. You see, ball go far, team go far, hit the ball over the fence. It's the most efficient way to score runs. You have somebody who does that. You have someone who hits balls over fences.
Yeah, who did one for you just on Sunday.
And I'm not going to indulge my begs the question pet peeve here because I know people are going to ask me to do that because I feel like that Peter Sagal and I are the last people that represent a constituency.
It begs the question.
No, it doesn't. Begging the question is arguing while assuming the conclusion of the argument as part of the argument.
But it begs the question,
no,
Dan.
No, it doesn't beg that. That's... I won't. I won't do it. I will hold off. I will save it.
You know, that begs the question, why wouldn't you?
The other problem, are the White Sox just remarkably unathletic? They're so slow. They have so many slow guys.
I think that Andrew Vaughn is slower than Konerko.
No, he's close, but he's not.
I think he's slower
no,
than Konerko.
No, he's not. No,
how
he's not.
Did he not get to first base on that ball?
On the sailfish?
Yeah. Josh Donaldson is just launching a Hail Mary to first base and gets him by a step.
Well, because
I could have beat that ball out.
Of course you could have. But so my contention years ago, I said Paul Konerko in Major League Baseball was the slowest non-fat
catcher,
non-hurt non-catcher. So somebody like Grandal is a hurt catcher.
Yeah.
So he's got two.
His knees is bone on bone at this
point. Not old. That was another criterion. It was old, fat, hurt, and catcher. So Grandal is old, hurt, catcher. Vaughn.
Old, hurt, right? Catcher.
Vaughn is not hurt. But then again, the whole White Sox sore legs thing. We never know where they are on the continuum of, ow, my legs hurt, right?
Yeah, we saw that last night, too.
Swaggy, no. Yeah, what's Moncada doing?
This is what I'm saying.
Anderson does it. Moncada does it. Like, I don't know. They seem to lack athleticism compared to other baseball teams that you see. Where guys are zipping around, and they're all like, elastic and twitchy.
There are times where it seems like they lack the desire to play.
Oh, that's a different argument. That's different. They just see
it. It was like, oh, I might have a hit. I don't have a hit. Well, I could have a hit.
No, he bobbled it.
Never mind.
So when Gordon Beckham called it a sailfish, I immediately remembered, wait a second, that's a Robin Ventura thing. And so in the middle of the game, because I'm annoying. So,
are you a sailfish too?
So I texted Benetti. I'm like, Jason, when you guys go to break, ask him off the air if the sailfish is some sort of Robin Ventura thing, because he used to name all his throws after fish that I remembered. So it got there. Like, as I'm typing, like, just after I sent the text, Benetti's like, or Beckham says, you know, that sailfish is something that Robin Ventura used to say, and then they kind of got going. It's like, well, a salmon is one where you're swimming upstream. The catfish is a bottom feeder, so that's the one that hops into the first baseman. There's a tuna. I forgot what the tuna was. But
it looks like Bill Parcells.
But every Robin Ventura throw from third, with the exception of the three-step drop, which is on like the high chopper you have to wait on. And he called that the three-step drop because it was a quarterback footwork. But I remembered that he named all his throws after fish, and I was very, very glad that they got there because I felt I had to program the broadcast at that point.
Well, at least you're paying attention to the broadcast.
Oh, yeah. Well, somebody has to tell Benetti when he makes a reference that only like three or four people are going to get.
Yeah, but he does that all the time.
I know.
I'm sure someone will tell him, and I'm sure it's the owner of the White Sox. That didn't make me laugh at all.
I hired a broadcaster, not somebody who makes obscure David Foster Wallace references.
Baseball players wear spikes.
So White Sox.
Not cleats, young man. Where's Mike Monaco? I like the cut of his jib.
I got Mike Monaco sitting next to me on the couch right here. I've got my arm around him. We're sharing a cigar. Mike, what do you think, young man? You're a strapping young lad. And I like you because you're professional.
You know about spikes.
Thank you for wearing spikes
while you're broadcasting the game.
All right, let's hear from a defeated Rory McIlroy next. You want to hear what despair and defeat sound like coming from a once proud professional athlete?
Sure.
You're about to next on The Score.
Bernstein and Holmes, middays 10 to 2 on Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com in Odyssey Station.
After the shock sort of ebbed away, I was hugely disappointed. I think this is one of the saddest days in the history of professional golf.
Randall Shambly. Man, if anybody's taking arrows, there are people who are dunking on him for really ugly and wrong reasons, because Randall Shambly's been right this whole time and has gone hard being right about it, but it sucks. And he understands that it sucks, and I think Rory McIlroy does too. But when you hear from Rory, you hear the sadness and the resignation in someone who has no choice, who's got really no agency and no alternative. And it's too bad because of what he did, what he did for people who just stabbed him in the back. I mean, really, it goes beyond mere hypocrisy. It's too easy to point out the perfect who you crappin' of all this. I mean, it's one of the great sports who you crappins of all time, right?
But yeah, Monahan himself, like,
yeah, like, I'm a hypocrite. What are you gonna do?
What are you gonna do?
That's before I said all that, but that's before they gave me all the money.
Then they came to my house, and they had this briefcase, and they opened it up, and they said, I don't know if you know what $100,000 in cash looks like.
$100 million.
And it was like, I was doing the White Goodman thing.
Oh, yeah. Where didn't it say Deus Ex Machina on the treasure chest?
It sure did. That's what I
That's great. Well, Rory, among other things, said this isn't a merger.
When I try to remove myself from the situation and I look at the bigger picture and I look at 10 years down the line, you know, I think ultimately this is going to be it's going to be good for the game of professional golf. I think it secures the it unifies it and it secures its financial future. So, you know, there's mixed emotions in there as well, as there's going to be. I don't understand all the intricacies of what's going on. It's a very, what's the word? You know, there's a lot of ambiguity. There's a lot of things still to be sort of thrashed out. But at least it means that the litigation goes away, which has been a massive burden for everyone that's involved with the tour and that's playing the tour. And we can start to work toward, you know, some sort of way of unifying the game at the elite level. The one thing that I think was really misconstrued yesterday was, you know, all the headlines were PGA Tour merges with LIV, and LIV has got nothing to do with this, right? I mean, it's the PGA Tour, DP World Tour, and the Public Investment Fund are basically partnering to create a new company. You know, this has gotten, you know, I think that's where I was a little frustrated, because all I've wanted to do and all I've wanted, you know, in the past year from basically this tournament is to protect the future of the PGA Tour and protect the aspirational nature of what the PGA Tour stands for. And I hope that this does that, but, you know, I think with the headlines being merges with LIV, like, that's not the, I mean, if you look at the structure of how it's structured down, this new company sits above everything. Jay's the CEO of that, so technically anyone that is involved with LIV now would answer to Jay. So, you know, the PGA Tour have control of everything. And the one thing as well is, you know, whether you like it or not, the PIF are going to keep spending money in golf. At least the PGA Tour now controls how that money is spent. You know, so I'd, you know, if you're thinking about some, you know, one of the biggest sovereign wealth funds in the world, would you rather have them as a partner or an enemy? At the end of the day, money talks, and you'd rather have them as a partner.
Decisions were made to hire Tony La Russa as manager.
I think that there are some reasonable statements inside of what Rory is saying, and I also think that you're listening to a guy that is doing some mental gymnastics here to...
He's obviously miserable.
Right. But the idea of, well, you know, we're controlling the money. No, the money is controlling the money, fam. Like, that's how they got here. He's right about, like, the lawsuits not sitting over the head of the PGA, but the I don't think that the alternative is what if we're talking about the PGA.
A bone saw hanging over your head is better than lawsuits. Well, or worse than lawsuits, I should say.
The concept of the PGA is aspirational. I don't think that is in play anymore. I don't think that they get to talk about any of that stuff anymore. If you want to just say, look, and Monahan has said it, and clearly the PGA as an organization has said it loudly with this new business venture, this unifying of golf, so to speak, that's fine. But they can save every bit of the idealism of the PGA. That was put on trial, and it lost resoundingly.
Yeah, they can retire all that rhetoric.
They spent a year selling that rhetoric, and then they sold their company. Like that's the amazing part. And I wonder in an honest moment, and it's clear that Rory still has some resentment towards the LIV golfers and the LIV tour in general.
But it's not LIV. I think that's the thing. I still hate LIV. Like, I hate LIV. Like, I hope it goes away, and I would fully expect that it does.
Okay, so that's the other thing that LIV is going, all the silly teams and the third-rate courses and the terrible television deals, like, they're going to scuttle all of that, right?
Maybe, but I think there's going to be elements of it that are going to be added to whatever this new PGA is.
They don't need to do that.
Why don't they?
Nobody wanted any of that. There was never a market for it. No one ever wanted it. No one watched it. Nobody cared about it.
Yeah, because they didn't have the golfers, and now they have the golfers.
Well, they had some of the golfers, but people want to. You want to watch people compete.
Okay.
I mean, if you're going to do this and have the stingers against the dinner tubes, and they're all going to be wearing shorts or whatever,
I would not be surprised if there are multiple events in the calendar year that are like that.
Well, I guess they can do whatever they want. But
right, that's the point.
But no one ever showed that. Nothing ever showed that anybody wanted it. They were trying to be different.
Supposedly, no one wanted anything to do with the sovereign fund.
Correct, but even the people who are invested in the sovereign fund, even the Saudis have to understand that nobody was watching.
They
their
don't have
stuff.
To understand, Jack.
Yeah, they can do whatever
Dan.
They want. They can do whatever they want. They have the golfers. They bought it.
Yes. So we'll see. I'm curious
now,
about this.
Here's my hope. Here's my hope, based on some of the response I got yesterday, that there are now government regulators who are going to be going through all of this with a fine-tooth comb.
Well,
about antitrust and what was at least to have some level of competition. Now there's no competition.
It's going to be interesting to see if there can be, if there is some bipartisan, like what?
Oh,
the?
Yeah. Ron Wyden is the chair of the Senate Finance Committee. And there are people from both sides of the aisle who are concerned that this unprecedented power and access now wielded by Saudi Arabia in this country will give them further access to real estate, et cetera, in a way that may be detrimental to national security. And I mean, there's all sorts of stuff that's been going on, even protesting that there's been a huge Saudi land grab in Arizona because of water restrictions elsewhere. And the encroachment of this money on other American things has already brought the attention of bipartisan groups of lawmakers. So it is my hope that people who may be involved in governing agencies and or legislative branches and the various committees are able to at least recognize, voice, and vet some of their concerns.
Let's talk about what this means for other sports, including football. Mike Florio will join us to talk about all of that and more next here on The Score.
We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds?
Let Odyssey put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Odyssey. Visit ads.odyssey.com.